Back together again as usual, Thursday style, April 25th of 2024, on Connecticut Today, where I chatted with Only in Bridgeport blogger Lenny Grimaldi about the city's budget issues and whether or not city council members should get actual salaries. Landmark Legal Foundation attorney Mike O'Neill also dropped by. He broke down the latest U.S. Supreme Court arguments involving former President Donald Trump. Here's a guy who knows DJT rather well. We'll get to that a little later, but first, Lenny Grimaldi's with us. Lenny, how are you?
I am the berries. How are you?
This is amazing.
So my former boss paid me to talk, not to keep quiet.
Well, I just, you know, he's complaining the courtroom is too cold. He's not on anything. But we'll get to him momentarily, Lenny.
Okay.
Why don't we do that? First of all, and you sound like you're breaking up, so if you can move around a little bit, I'd appreciate it. This question, Lenny, if we've talked about it, I've talked about it with Chris Caruso and other people. We've talked about it on other parts of the station here, other day parts. Should the city council in Bridgeport, just bigger stipends, or should we go with salaries to give them a little more wiggle room here? What are your thoughts on that, and where does that stand right now?
Yeah, so this has been examined before. You know, so the Bridgeport City Council, you know, technically they're volunteers, right? But they receive stipends, annual stipends, to cover the costs associated with constituent duties and expenses. And that number is going to increase, according to the current proposed budget, to $1,500 per month or $18,000 per year.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there has been some discussion, and the city council president, Adi Nieves, has raised it, that maybe it's time to examine approval of salaries for city council members. I think it would probably require a city charter amendment. But if there's, she's saying, look, we have more responsibilities than we had before.
Yeah.
So why not give us salaried positions? The argument could be that you get a better breed of candidate running for city council. So, I mean, I see the value of it. And you're talking to someone right now who's has written for years that, you know, I think city council members should be paid.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And some people push back on that. And so this is something that could go before voters perhaps next year as a possibility, or in lieu of that, if they don't think it'll pass, because you're putting something on the ballot that the voters are going to say, well, I'm not going to pay the city council members, but they can, if in lieu of that, they can continue to raise their stipends.
Yeah, now, right? And Lenny, the thing that I would want, because I'm a big just pay legislators, they have responsibilities, give them pay. Wouldn't this eliminate, and you and I have talked about this before, you know, and Chris and I talk about this all the time. Okay, can he or she really do that with that money? It's a stipend. It's not a salary. Like, wouldn't it just eliminate part of that? I mean, it would cost more maybe, but wouldn't this take away a cloud of funny business here? Because, look, Lenny, you can't tell me, I'm sorry, with the best of intentions, that all the spending of the stipend money is what it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think some of it does go to constituents. I mean, we've had city council members who pay for funerals with that, for that,
mm-hmm,
stipend.
Yeah.
Now, you could argue, is that in the course of their business? You know, the day in and day out duties of a city council member? And you get to argue, well, not necessarily, but it's not, none of this is cast in stone of how it's supposed to be spent, right? And so, Ernie Newton, who is the co-chair of the Budget and Appropriations Committee, is, you know, he said, listen, I have people, my constituents call me and say, hey, I got funerals and I can't pay for them, right? And so some of these council members, mm-hmm, will spend some of the stipend money on that. They get a card. It's done quarterly.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them argue also, we go to these events in Washington, all of these governmental national events, to learn about how we can bring home better ideas to our constituents. And some of them, you know, pay that the stipend towards that goal,
yeah,
to get. So, yeah, it's an interesting dialogue. So they're going to get a larger stipend. The question is, eventually, will there be salaried city council members? And it could be a possibility down the road.
Sure. Speaking of money, I see there are chances for Bridgeport citizens to voice their opinion, Lenny, about how the money is going to be raised or spent in the budget.
Yeah, if you're going to squawk, do it now.
Really?
Yeah, it's time. So, by the way, the first public hearing is going to be like half an hour now, basically.
Okay.
6 o'clock, city council chambers. It's the capital plan, so there's going to be three public hearings within the next week. The first one's tonight, 6 p.m. There's going to be one on Monday, 6 p.m., to discuss the Board of Education. And I dare say that's going to be the largest one, right? Then there's going to be one May 2nd covering the general fund budget.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the general fund budget, if there's no tax increase, people tend not to show up, right? And it had been crickets. I've gone to these, these public hearings for the general fund, and there's been like one person there.
There's nobody there.
Oh, it's crickets, crickets. So the city council chambers holds 600 people.
There's one person. It's one person.
And I'm a terrible photographer, but I will take a picture of that one person sitting so lonely in the city council
and
chambers.
I hope you write a story on them. That's a great story. You're the only person here. What are you doing?
Yeah, and I have. Every year I will do it. I'll just, there's one person in there, and I'll write, who are you? And I'm a mailman. I'm a mailman, and I'm just showing up, right?
So, yeah.
But I think Monday, April 29th, you may have some people there for the Board of Education budget, mm-hmm. because they're seeking more money, and it's just not Bridgeport. You know, you've got Board of Educations across the state of Connecticut.
Sure.
Who are like saying, well, all the COVID money has run out.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But what are we going to do? What are we going to do? So there's going to be some cuts here and there. A lot of municipalities, education districts are hemorrhaging a little bit right now.
Finally, your boss, your ex-boss, Mr. Trump, still on trial here. A couple of new polls have come out. He is still in a dead heat with Joe Biden. And there was a poll I talked about the other day, a Morning Consult Bloomberg poll. For all the stuff he's facing, Lenny, he's what, up, doing decently well in six of seven swing states. We know it's early, but again, what are your thoughts on this? What do you see from him? What do you think he's thinking right now?
It's a giant toothache for him right now. I think to answer your question, I don't think right now it's about Trump. I think it's more like, what is Joe Biden going to do to persuade the voters in battleground states when they're doing better than they feel? And he's got a huge spending advantage, right? So I think for what's going to happen in this trial, and it's going to be super salacious. You know, I love that leadoff witness. His last name is Pecker.
Go ahead.
Okay, David Pecker. And he did, I think Pecker did a good job.
Yeah.
On direct cross-examination.
Yeah.
Just finished up about a half hour or an hour ago. They're trying to poke holes in him.
Yeah.
But I think he's holding up pretty good from based on, what I'm watching and reading about the case. But it's a process. And I've been there. I've been on cross-examination,
mm-hmm.
right? I know what it's like when they come at you and they throw everything at you. And so I think the opening witness in this case is really, really important. I think it's pretty damaging to him. But it's a process, and you got 12 jurors. If you have one holdout,
yeah,
right, and that's how it works. But it's going to get very embarrassing.
I don't know, Lenny. I would like you said earlier in the show. I'd rather be on a slip and fall case that somebody didn't clean up the broken jar of ragu on aisle 3. That case I'll do. There's no way I'd want to be in it. Would you want to be on this case? Well, you can. But let's say you didn't know the guy. Let's say you didn't know Donald Trump from Adam. Would you want to serve on this case? I wouldn't. No way.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Just picking a jury. But here's the thing. It's a jury, all from Manhattan, all well-educated.
Yeah.
Right? And so that does not stack up well against him, all right?
Mm-hmm.
But, again, you have one holdout.
All you need. It's all you need.
One.
Yeah.
All you need is one. So it's not a civil proceeding. It's a criminal proceeding, and you need all 12 to be on board.
Mm.
If there's one that just says, you know what, I'm not really getting this, right? But also there's also that, sometimes jurors who believe one way, and they're persuadable for others to come on board too. So it's going to play out for 3 or 4 or 5 weeks. We'll see.
All right. Lenny Grimaldi, the website onlyinbridgeport.com. Check it out. The latest from Park City there. Lenny, be good. Have a good weekend, and we'll talk to you next week. Thanks.
See you next week.
All right, Lenny. Thanks. There you go. Right now, though, we go to one of our legal eagles to explain stuff when it happens at the U.S. Supreme Court or on the federal level. Mike O'Neill, our buddy, our pal, Landmark Legal Foundation. Check it out, landmarklegal.org. Mike, it's Paul here in Connecticut. How are you?
I'm good, Paul. Good to talk.
And thanks for offering up the time. We know you're busy. Okay. Yeah. And you're obviously, you and the staff there, watching the argument at the Supreme Court here. And now I'm starting to see from the mainstream outlets, Mike, I don't know whether you perceive this, they're like, oh, now these are people who aren't enamored with Mr. Trump saying, hey, it looks like some of the justices may be opening some limited sorts of protections for Donald Trump. So lay it out. What's going on here? Why is this important, and who's arguing what?
Right. So this, it's funny because beginning of the day we went in, you almost went in, Trump went in as a 14-point underdog, not expecting to have a good day, and he came out and it looks like it might have been a draw.
Wow.
Or it might have been a little bit better than for him, even better than a draw. So mm-hmm. I was anticipating just a bad day. But the takeaway here was the immunity claims, the presidential immunity claims. Now let's talk about what the issue is. The issue is whether President Trump can be tried on criminal charges that he conspired to overturn the results of the 2020 election. And what he has asserted is that he has asserted presidential immunity, that he has said when he was acting in his capacity as president of the United States and as president of the United States in his official capacity, acting in his official capacity, he enjoys immunity from criminal prosecution.
Hmm.
Now, that doesn't mean that he can't be prosecuted or he doesn't face criminal consequences for what he does, how he acts in his personal capacity. But when he's acting in his official capacity as president of the United States, he enjoys immunity from criminal prosecution. And that was the argument that was really proffered in front of the court today. The D.C. Circuit Court, the Court of Appeals, issued a decision several months ago, which led to this appeal into the United States Supreme Court. And the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals ruled kind of in almost an absolute manner, in a blanket manner, said that the president does not enjoy any kind of immunity from criminal prosecution mm-hmm. after he leaves office.
So this is different, and just to set this up so people mm-hmm. understand and there's no sort of confusion here, this
right.
is different from executive privilege, right?
Yes, this is absolutely. This is different from privilege. This is immunity from criminal prosecution. So what's happened here procedurally is President Trump, the allegation here is that he violated a criminal statute, and the criminal statute that he was alleged to have violated was interference with an official proceeding,
mm-hmm.
and that he exercised undue influence, and this is all of the after the election and leading up to January 6th, that he sought to interfere with the peaceful transition of power, the certification of the election of Joe Biden, and that he sought to undermine and interfere with an official proceeding, i.e. the certification of Joe Biden as president. That was the official proceeding. Well, this is an alleged violation of that criminal statute.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the question is, he left office. He's no longer president of the United States. Does he have immunity for that, for his actions in that interval time after the election and before January 20th, before Joe Biden took office? So the argument here really boils down to this, Paul, is whether he was acting in an official capacity or whether he was acting in a personal capacity in this. If the court determines that there is a distinction to be made between actions of his official actions and personal actions, and whether there were sufficient allegations. Now, this gets a little technical
yeah.
from a legal standpoint,
yeah.
but bear with me for it.
Sure.
What will happen is, if the court can make a distinction that the president enjoys immunity for his official acts but doesn't enjoy immunity for his personal acts, then what's going to happen is the court's going to have to remand this down to the district court or to the circuit court, which will, again, in turn, remand it to the lower court, which will have to have a factual understanding and a legal conclusion of
wow.
what exactly, kind of sort out what were the official acts, what were the legal, what were the personal acts, and do the personal acts support the allegations that he actually violated the criminal statute. So you're going to have to sort out these legalities of what's an official and what's an unofficial action. So let me just say one more thing.
Sure.
The lawyer for President Trump was very smart here. He tried to die on the hill that there was an absolute immunity. He conceded that president's, because of course, well, what if the president murders his wife,
yeah,
or murders his kid? Well, yeah, that's a personal action. Of course, he's not going to have immunity from that. But if the president is acting in his capacity as president and he relies on, and you can, it falls within that ambit of official presidential power. And again, that's really kind of where we're going to get into here. What constitutes an official presidential act versus what constitutes a personal act?
Mm.
So it's a little bit technical here. And when it comes to technicalities, you might find a way where Trump can not necessarily win definitively, but the court says, the circuit court ruled too broadly. We're going to have some, there's going to have to be some fine tuning done on this. And so they're going to remand it back. And ultimately what will happen procedurally is this will delay the process and push it back post election, post November.
Wow.
And then if President Trump is reelected, then this all becomes moot.
Mike O'Neill from the Landmark Legal Foundation. So, Mike, finally, the comeback from the attorney representing Jack Smith, the special counsel here in the January 6th case, how did he, I mean, I saw it, but I don't really understand it. How did he formulate his defense and his argument against the Trump lawyers?
Well, right. He did concede that there is the official act. However, what he tried to say is that the official act protection that the president might have for immunity, this is way, his actions after the election, after the November 2020 election, are way outside that. He was acting in his personal capacity when he was directing his RNC chair to call the Arizona folks, the Arizona legislature, and have them set aside their electors. He was acting outside his. It was all outside of this. Mm-hmm. Furthermore, this is a particularly heinous example, a heinous exercise of this power, because it goes right to the core fundamental principle of our democracy, i.e. peaceful transition of power. And this is why it necessitates this kind of prosecution. What's really important here is what happens if there is no presidential immunity for official acts? Well, then it can be wielded as a political cudgel right now. So say I'm Barack Obama, we could charge Barack Obama with murder for the drone strikes that he executed. Well, murder doesn't have a statute of limitations. Well, did he violate a murder statute? And years after the fact, we're going to prosecute Barack Obama for murder. And what can happen also, and the court kind of keyed on this, it can act as a disincentive for a president to leave peacefully.
Mm.
If I'm President Trump and I'm worried that I'm going to be prosecuted for criminal violations on political issues, then I'm not going to leave. I'm not going to want to leave, because the minute I leave office, I'm going to be prosecuted. And you laugh, but this is what happens in banana third world republics.
Yes, and that was the argument. That was the argument I saw today, and I think it was from Mr. Trump's attorney. Yeah. Hey, Mike, finally, if I can get you for a minute or so, I know you're paying attention to this. What is your opinion so far, if you have one, regarding the New York case and the hush money case going the way it, and I know we're early and we're still hearing from the publisher, but what are your thoughts on this?
Well, it's going to, first of all, I think it's, again, here we are with the politicization of this. The question here is whether there is this tortured stretch to get to the law here. And under New York law, it was a misdemeanor for the underlying crime was a misdemeanor. It's outside the statute of limitations for prosecution of that crime. They had to loop in a federal statute to escalate it into a felony statute. Again, my bottom line on this is I don't think it's necessarily going to go right for Trump. This has always been probably one of his biggest, the exposure for an actual criminal conviction. This is probably that. However, Paul, I want to say this.
Sure.
New Yorkers are a fickle bunch, and you're up in Connecticut, so you're a little closer to.
Oh
this.
Yeah, I know.
New Yorkers are a fickle bunch. I don't necessarily subscribe to the conventional wisdom that this jury is automatically predisposed to go against Trump. So, sometimes life has a way of throwing us ringers here and bucking conventional wisdom. And goodness knows, New Yorkers can buck conventional wisdom. So I don't necessarily subscribe to the conventional wisdom that all of this jury is predisposed to rule against Trump. So you never know what you're going to have in this. I would suggest, though, that this gag order issue could be very problematic.
Mm-hmm.
And as an attorney, I kind of instinctually cringe when my client would be openly defying gag orders, but
and you're sitting there going shh.
There is that instinct, absolutely. But former President Trump is always going to be former President Trump.
Yeah. Being quiet, he does not know. Hey, thanks. Mike O'Neill, Landmark Legal Foundation. Check him out online, landmarklegal.org, landmarklegal.org. Mike, thanks, and we'll talk down the road, my friend. Thank you.
Always a pleasure.
Appreciate it. Thanks. Good guy there. Mike O'Neill, landmarklegal.org. Check it out.